Well, the Church of England has been in the news this week for getting women bishops over the line at last. But what also made the news from the Church of England was that they are giving their clergy the option of taking the devil out of the baptism service. Instead of asking parents of a child, do they reject the devil and all rebellion against God, they're now going to reject evil and all its many forms and all its empty promises, with no explicit mention of the devil. There was a great soundbite that I saw of one of the synod members making an impassioned speech. "I urge you to keep the devil," she said. The mind boggles. Our baptism service says, "Do you renounce all evil influences and powers that rebel against God?" It's still pretty strong language, but doesn't talk about the devil in person. When I talk with parents ahead of a baptism, we talk about that strong language, because it does seem a bit much when they're bringing this perfect little baby for baptism to be asked, "Do you renounce all evil influences and powers that rebel against God?" But I'm often surprised just how easily the parents get what this is about, because they want to make a choice for good for their children. They want to protect them, and they want to lay claim to the goodness of the world while recognizing that evil is indeed a reality that their child is going to have to face. In the parable that we have today as our gospel reading, Jesus brings evil very much into the picture. And Matthew, the gospel writer, labours the evil part rather heavily in his explanation of the parable. Jesus again reminds his listeners this week that really he wasn't a farmer. Last week he had a farmer sowing seed on rocky paths and in thorny ground, and this week he tells a story about a farmer who deliberately leaves the weeds to grow. What kind of farmer in their right mind would do that? In the story this time, the farmer sows good seed for good wheat in his field, which he has carefully ploughed and tilled and prepared. But overnight an enemy, maybe the next door farmer, sows weeds amongst the wheat. And the farmer's slaves say, "Well, of course, let's get in there quick and weed the plot so that the weeds won't strangle the wheat." But the farmer says, "Leave them. We'll sort it at harvest time." Now, I know nothing at all about wheat, but I am reliably informed that the weeds in the parable are actually something called darnel wheat, which look exactly like ordinary wheat until it's fully grown. And then when it's fully grown, the real wheat bends over with the weight of the ears, and the false wheat, the darnel wheat, stays straight because they are bearing no fruit, no harvest. So it's not until harvest time that you can tell the difference between the two kinds of wheat. And Jesus says, "Let both of them grow until the harvest." And that little word "let" is aphemi in the Greek, which also means to forgive. Forgive them until the harvest. Matthew then adds an explanation to the parable and says that the good seed are the children of the kingdom and the weeds are the children of the evil one. But you can't tell by looking which is which. You can tell later when they bear grain for the harvest. And then Matthew spends quite a long time, a lot longer than Jesus, on throwing the weeds into the furnace of hellfire to burn forever. But like Matthew, I think we are often quick to condemn or to judge or to put people in a category, to demonise them, to say that they're going to be thrown into the fire at the end of time. We're always very quick to name the evil ones in our world, right through history, but also in modern times we have lots of terrible examples of how that has happened. Hutu and Tutsi in Rwanda, Bosnian Serb and Croat, Palestinian and Israeli, Ukrainian and Russian. We think we know what evil looks like, and so we think it should be rooted out. We don't recognise the humanity of our opponent. We don't see that they are children of God as well. As the conflict in Israel-Palestine and in Gaza escalates, there seems to be no way out of the violence and suffering there. Everyone seems to be terribly sure who the evil one is. And yet there are ordinary Israelis and Palestinians who are trying their hardest not to do that, but to see the good in the other. I read this week about a group called the Parents' Circle. It's parents who have lost their children to the violence on both sides. And one mother writes this: "To all the mothers who have just joined the dreaded club of the bereaved, both Israeli and Palestinian, we at the Parents' Circle extend a hand to you. We too have heard the knock on the door which changes your life forever. We understand that the pain of a mother losing a child is the same, no matter where she comes from, what colour her skin is, and to whom she prays at night. The tears falling on the pillow are the same colour. We cannot allow the violence to continue. Let us raise our voices together to stop the senseless killing. Stop the violence. Stop the rhetoric. No one has the right to use our beloved children as pawns in a battle that can never be won. Let us join together as one and beg our leaders to stop, and beg them to understand that the cycle of violence will continue until all that is left is the sharing of graves." If God were to judge humanity today, as Matthew describes, and root out all of the evil, all of the darnel wheat, then none of us would survive, because we all have the capacity for evil. We all sin at times, and we know from history that good people can do unforgivable things. I would imagine that the people who pressed the button that brought down that plane over the Ukraine have mothers and brothers and sisters and children who love them and who think they are good people. Good people can do unforgivable things. And yet, God allows us to grow in God's world. God allows us to grow and lets us grow and forgives us as we grow, and waits to see the bearing of the grain, the fruit of our lives. Paul promises in his letter to the Romans that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. Paul uses the image of a woman in labour, and he says, "We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labour pains until now." And not only the creation, but we ourselves, we have the first fruits of the Spirit. We have the first fruits of the harvest. And Paul says, "For in hope we were saved. Hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it in patience." And so we yearn for a world that can be set free from bondage to evil. We yearn for a world where Israeli and Palestinian will live together in peace. And we yearn for a world where planes will not be shot down out of the sky. Parents who bring their children for baptism claim freedom in Christ, and they want their children to be blessed and to grow with love, not hate, in their hearts. They yearn for that world set free. And we can't fix wars and massacres and genocide, but we can reflect on our own attitude to those who we think of as the other, to those who we might be tempted to think of as the children of the evil one. We all have people that we label and put in boxes and make assumptions about. We all have people in our lives that we write off. In this election time, there's lots of labelling and writing off of people, lots of writing off of politicians, lots of writing off of policies. But as people of faith, we are called to be discerning, to reflect, and not to be quick to judge. And our discernment involves not just our personal actions, but the way that we act together as a society. The way that systemic evils of racism and sexism and homophobia wrap their roots around the good wheat and try and strangle them. The way we live and act together can reverse that process, and instead the good roots can strangle the weeds. Jesus says to us, let the wheat be, let everything grow, let everything take their place in the field, and chances are they'll turn out to be good wheat too. The harvest will come, but in the meantime, you get on with loving and forgiving and believing in the good of my created humanity. Get on with claiming life and hope for your children. The second question in our baptism service is, do you trust in Christ who brings forgiveness, freedom, and life? And the parents reply, in faith, I turn to Christ. Like the wheat turning to the sun to grow and thrive, like that wheat, we turn to Christ and seek help for our broken and suffering world. We cry out as a woman does in labour, and we hope for what we do not see, and we wait for it with patience. And we wait for it with certainty that the good wheat will prevail in the end.